We made this.
Hi, Matt Latham here. You're listening to Pick a Disc, the show where people pick a disc and talk about it for whatever reason they want to. This week, my guest is Chris Wilson, who you may have heard all the way back from episode 5, where we talked about Limp Bizkit's Chocolate Starfish and Hot Dog Flavored with Water. Today, we're talking about Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory. And we'll talk about the blending of genres that the album did. We talk about the songwriting, the songwriters. We talk about the history of the band briefly. We talk about the differences in the style of songs on the album and the reason why. We talk about Machinado. We talk about Chester Bennington. We talk about a lot of stuff. And it's a really good conversation. Before I push the button that lets you listen to us talk, I want to point out that you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, join the Facebook group. Just email us at pickadisc@gmail.com to leave feedback or anything. At the time of recording, I am currently working on end of year episodes with very short, bite-sized episodes that will turn up near the end of the year. I'll talk about my favourite albums of the year. Surprise, surprise. And what I've mentioned is that there are opportunities if people want to submit their favourite albums to me in a message, or even if you want to record a 30-second clip and I might play it and edit it into the podcasts, then feel free to submit your favourite albums to me for whatever means you want to. And if you're interested in having your voice appear, then do so. And if you can get them to me before Friday the 13th of December, then most likely you should be able to hear yourself say, "I like the album blah blah by blah blah because it is good," or perhaps a bit more elegantly than that. But enough about me, enough about you. Let's talk to Chris Wilson about a theory that is hybrid. Mr. Chris Wilson, back once again for his second go at picking a disc. Yes. Your first episode was Limp Bizkit.
Yes, it was.
And Chocolate Starfish and Hot Dog Flavoured Water. And for some reason, it is still our most popular episode with the most number of downloads by at least 3 times, the second highest. And I still to this day am not quite sure how.
No, neither am I, because obviously we're part of the same network, so I've been able to have a sneaky peek at it a couple of times, and I don't think it's because I'm popular or anything like that, because, you know, apart from one episode of Cinema Tree, it's like more listens than what I've had on my other podcasts, so I think just people want to still limp with a biscuit after all this time.
I know, yeah, unless it's like the only episode so far where I wasn't completely enamoured with the album itself, and which is kind of worrying because it's completely the anti-ethos of the podcast. Yeah.
So still dead last on your rankings then?
Yes.
Brilliant.
I've stopped ranking the albums pretty much on the podcast for now, and I've not really ranked them that much since, but I can't think of one that I've... It's like, there's not been one that I've very much disliked or hated. I mean... But it's one of like the least. There are highlights on it. I mean, I'm not completely didn't completely hate it. There was moments of songs on there that I did quite like. I will maintain that Take a Look Around is a really good song.
Is it still the only album still that you listen to on YouTube specifically, not to screw up your Spotify algorithm?
Yes. Actually, I don't think I've listened to it since we recorded the episode all the way back in February. But we're not here to talk about Limp Bizkit. We're here to talk about another band that begins with the letter L, and one that was brought up in your previous episode. Which disc have you picked for your second appearance?
Well, while we're in the LI category, and the new metal category, should I say, I decided to go for Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory, which, if I remember rightly, was, I think we discussed this last time, released possibly the same day as each other, as Chocolate Starfish, it seems to ring a bell, to be fair.
Actually, I think it was a week after, from the looks of it.
It was truly a golden time in music.
Yeah. I thought there was a lot bigger gap, I think. But no, Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park was released a week after Chocolate Starfish. Linkin Park, they're a rock band from all the way from LA. Several members at some point. Mainly in a 5-piece, sadly now a 4-piece, I believe.
I think it was 6-piece into a 5-piece now.
Okay. Ah, okay. Yeah. Sorry. It was 6-piece to a 5-piece for tragic reasons we'll probably discuss later on. Their debut album, released on the 24th of October 2000, Hybrid Theory, did slightly well.
A bit.
Yeah. I believe it's about 30 million copies worldwide to date.
It is the best-selling rock album of the 21st century.
Yeah, and I think it basically overtook Appetite for Destruction.
I think Appetite for Destruction still has had more record sales, but bear in mind that had about 13 years advantage.
Cunningly read from Wikipedia. It's in the book 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die, and it was also 11th in Billboard's 200 Albums of the Noughties. So it's got some high acclaim. Yeah.
Oh, same that Chocolate Starfish was in the 1001 album you should listen to before you die as well, so should probably discount that one.
Okay, yeah, note to self, get that book. For research. Linkin Park, Hybrid Theory, good album, one that I own, one that I really like, and pretty much at the time it was released, I pretty much liked it because there was rap bits in it, and around 2000, when I was 14, 15, I was into the rap music, as I may have brought up a few times in the podcast. But Chris, why have you picked this disc?
Well, I've basically, after picking the first album that really got me into music last time, I've now picked the second album that really got me into music. So, after listening to Chocolate Starfish quite a few times over like a space of 1 or 2 months, I was like speaking to a friend at school about what other albums should I check out, and he recommended Linkin Park. So I, shall we say, acquired a copy of Hybrid Theory. So no Thompson back in those days. It was very much burning CDs. And, listened to it from there. And, I will go in an order here of, like, I think I know, like, the first 7 albums I ever got into. So that's my next 5 appearances sorted out as well.
Okay, so that kind of just like answers the question about how you found out about them as well. Was it just a friend that said, oh, you need to listen to something better than Limp Bizkit?
I don't think it was really like that. No, I mean, I was aware of Linkin Park. I'd seen the music video for Papercut on, I think the TV channel was called The Box back in the day. So it was like, it was a really poppy music video channel, but it played Linkin Park and I think a couple of like the heavier songs won there at the time. So I was aware of them. I seem to remember not really liking it that much at first, but when my friend recommended it, I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. And yeah, good call. Very good call.
I think it was on MTV a lot as well, because I remember it was MTV Select, which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, international listeners, I think MTV Select was the British version or the British attempt at trying to do, I think, Total Request Live. It played it a lot, and I kind of remember not being that much enamoured by it, but I think it was, it might have been Papercut, again, because of the rap bits in it. And I remember kind of listening to like half the album and stuff, but it was just like very much everywhere, and I had friends that were kind of into like the kind of the pop punk stuff, and they was like really into them and everything, and I've somehow managed to get absorbed into it, I think, because of what looked like a very crossover, like the kind of crossover with the genre that I was into at the time,
Because like most like of the new metal bands at the time, obviously part of the new metal is that they incorporate like the rap and hip hop elements into it. But I think Linkin Park were one of the rare ones where it meshed really well and it didn't feel like it stuck out like a sore thumb.
No, I mean I can't remember who it was, but I remember someone once telling me that if you have more than one genre in music, then the music's not going to be very good, which I completely disagree with.
Yeah,
completely. And if you ever want an example of how combining multiple genres into one, then I think this album is pretty much
one of the prime examples of that, because you've got your metal, you've got your kind of rock, you've got your rap, you've got your rap metal, you've got kind of like hip hop, you've got kind of industrial, you've got industrial music, and
a bit of an electronica vein of background, electronica, as well, you know?
Yeah, and people might snub their nose at what I'm about to say, but there is elements of pop in there as well, because it is very melodic in comparison to your kind of pure metal bands and stuff. It's melodic. It's very catchy.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading stuff back in the day on the internet calling Linkin Park a boy band because to some metalheads, they were more pop than rock or metal, which, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that in all fairness. I mean, it's probably not the correct assessment, but yeah, there was a lot of pop in there.
Yeah, I think it opens a lot for crossover, and I think a large part of the appeal is because there is something for a lot of people. I mean, like, I was not a metal fan, I'm still not a metal fan, but I really like this album.
Mm.
And I think a lot of that is because of, at the time, it was because of Mike Shinoda, one of the lead vocalists slash producer slash guitarist.
Yeah.
Like, he had a lot of the verses are pretty much rapped, and he's very good at it. Very influenced by hip-hop as well, and that was my appeal for it. I mean, I think your appeal was probably something different. Is that right?
I'd probably say I lent more towards like the Chester Bennington sort of side of Linkin Park, you know, in terms of the vocals, you know, the singing, the shouting. I think that appealed to me a bit more, but not that much. You know, if we're like going on about Mike Shinoda's rapping as well, it fitted really well, and I was never off-putted by it.
It kind of worked in a very similar way to Run DMC and Aerosmith's Walk This Way, kind of, but...
See, I don't think that Walk This Way meshes that well.
Really?
I think there's two different songs going on in there.
Mm.
That could be a hot take, but yeah, I don't think that and... Oh, who was it? When Anthrax and Public Enemy did one as well, again, it didn't mesh that well, I don't think.
Okay, was that Bring the Noise? Well,
that's the one, yes.
Yeah. See, Bring the Noise, I think, is actually better than Walk This Way, but I think as blueprints for what could be possible, I mean, like, inevitably you'd get stuff like Kid Rock out of it, but this is when you reveal that, oh yeah, Kid Rock's one of my first white albums.
It is very not, unfortunately. I liked one song of his, and that's because here's a wrestling reference. It was the Undertaker's theme tune at one point, but that's about it.
There's a lot here to kind of open it up for pretty much a large amount of people, and I think the lasting legacy of the songs and the fact that we'll talk about the songs in general a bit more, but the amount of times I've heard kind of like soft guitar acoustic covers of some of the singles on here, particularly In the End and Crawling, and they get rebuilt into these like lovely soft acoustic ambient songs.
Yes.
It's just a crossover of, because the crossover makes the crossover complete, I think. So
you can, and I recommend it. Lose an Evening, just looking through cover versions on YouTube of all sorts of different genres, you know, of Linkin Park songs. You know, like either covers and such. Because, again, it's one of those... I think I said this in the Limp Bizkit episode as well, but like all the instrumental stuff underneath, I actually think is quite beautiful in its own way. And obviously there's like a whole generation of musicians that have seen the same thing and have decided, okay, how about I do this with it, or how about I do that with it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... I think I've said on the podcast before, I'm not much of someone who delves into instrumentation, and I think one of the reasons they doing the podcast is try and get me to look at music in a slightly different way. And I was deliberately listening to the music and stuff. There is so much going on here. Like, there's the disc scratches, there's the instrumental, there's the electronic kind of synth piano, keyboards, the sound effects, there's pianos and everything, and as well as the guitars. And
yeah, and one thing I used to always think was, and no need to be sound harsh on the guy, but I think the easiest job in the world is being the guitarist of Linkin Park, because there's so much other stuff going on as well. He doesn't hardly need to do anything, and most of the time he doesn't really, but it works. works really well.
Indeed, yeah. So let's talk about the songs in general then. So if we talk, if I'm asking you to pick a few songs at the top of your head of that jump out, what songs would you say?
Oh, it's like trying to ask pick your favourite child. shall we start at like the back end, because so with Hybrid Theory, like 4 or 5 singles are in the first 5 tracks, and then apart from In the End, in the second half, it's all like non-singles. But I think that second half is actually a lot more interesting than what you get at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So like tracks like Runaway and By Myself and Forgotten, you know, I probably put them up there as like my favourite tracks of the whole album, apart from like my choice I'm going to pick later on for the Hall of Fame, so I won't spoil it just yet.
Okay. I mean, like, it's interesting you say that, because it is an album of almost two halves for me anyway. You've got all the singles, and you've got all the singles. I think there's like, yeah, 5, well, there's the 4 big ones, and then I keep forgetting the Points of Authority was released as one as well, but I can't remember if that was part of Reanimation, which we'll mention later on.
It was both. So I believe it got released as a maybe partial single, possibly a radio single in America. It did get a music video, the original Points of Authority, but it was just mainly them playing at a couple of music festivals. But I think that was released as a single properly.
Okay, let's talk about the non-singles then, a bit more non-singles in end. So, for example, Forgotten... is one that was and I only recently found it when I was doing some research on it last night, actually, where, and I learned something in that Chester Bennington wasn't the original vocalist, or wasn't the first vocalist.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it was a guy called Mike Wakefield, I think.
Yeah, so there's this whole story about it, and because I looked on Wikipedia at Corey Ron, and there's actually a whole different side of the story that's not even on here. So shall I just go through quickly from what I know about like the run up into recording this album?
Yeah please, yeah.
So there was this original vocalist, Mark Farrington, I believe his name was, and so he like left, and they got in Chester Bennington, who was already playing for another band, but they had split up, but he was still, through his lawyer, well connected to the music industry, so they were looking for a band to put him in. And then Linkin Park comes along, originally known as Zero, and they put him in there, and they start recording all that lot. And then there's a story, so basically when the 15th anniversary of Hybrid Theory happened, they did like this long, extensive interview on the Radio 1 Rock Show that I listened to, and apparently after Chester Bennington came in, then the record label wanted to sack Mike Shinoda because they didn't like the rapping bit, basically. And Bennington had to basically stand ground and keep Mike in the band. Yeah, so there's all sorts of like different things going on behind the scenes even before like the debut album comes out.
All right. I wasn't aware of that. I mean, like, I think Forgotten, for example, I think is one that I think was an original demo that I found on YouTube. I think it was called Rhinestone or something like that. And it's the same song. You can tell it's the same song, but like the verses are much longer. It sounds like it's recorded in the garage, and you've got Wakefield's vocals in the voice.
I think, and with most of the demos as well, I'm right in thinking that all the rapping is like space. All the rapping is completely different, as in like the lyrics, whereas all the choruses are mainly in place until we get to the actual final album, I believe.
I think so. I didn't listen to all of them, but Forgotten is definitely... There are bits of stanzas that are chopped up and mixed around in Forgotten. I think the chorus is quite different. I mean, I think in the core on Forgotten was something like in the core that is rotten, I think, and from what I remember reading.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But, I mean, like, it's quite an interesting comparison about what actually happens, and there's also clips of a unmastered version of the album, and to this day I cannot tell the difference between an unmastered version of an album and a mastered version of the album.
I think it's for the most part, it's just a couple of overdubs to make things sound a bit cleaner and clearer.
I think it's just I think you just changed the levels or something, I think. So, like, the vocals are slightly higher above in the mix. But I'm assuming that anyone listening to this will probably be able to inform me. Actually, if you're listening, Colin, from Weeding Music, you probably know the difference.
That's it. I've listened to a few remastered albums, especially recently, and I can't tell the difference between any of them. About the closest one was I listened to the remastered version of R.E.M.'s Monster recently, and they just turned Michael Stipe's vocals up a bit. There you go. That'd be another £50, please. Yeah, great.
Yeah, I think on older albums, I think it's just the case they just managed to remove the record hiss, I think. But, Forgotten, I think, was one that I remember really enjoying as well. And that the back half of the album. I'm really, really really do like Pushing Me Away as the final song.
That's an excellent album closer.
Yeah.
I'd say, obviously, that top, you know, the whole album closer thing on the next album with None, but as I was wrapping this one up, you know, a fantastic tune.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And not to talk about
I think it's Meteora. I've never known how to properly pronounce it.
Okay, Meteora. I think Numi's probably my favourite Linkin Park track, but that's a whole other story. I think Cure for the Itch, I remember kind of skipping much because, again, because I'm not much into instrumental songs and stuff, but I deliberately gave it a listen. As you said, it is quite interesting that they gave, like, the instrumental aspect of the band a chance to shine, and there is so much, like, stuff going on in that.
Yeah, it's, I'm sure I've heard the Cure for the Itch somewhere before I got to this album, so I think it must have been used on an advert or as background music for something that I watched. Because I'm pretty sure I heard it before I did. I'd say it's a really good track. Sort of reminds me slightly of Club to Death. If you remember that track, it was like basically background music for everything in 2008.
I can't remember that. I don't think I can remember it.
Once you listen to it, the first 2 seconds, you'll get it.
Okay, I'll have to nod to self. Quick Google, yeah. once we finish recording.
Yeah. Club to Death. And what else have we got back there? The back end, I'm all about, like, starting with, like, Runaway, which, again, I like, a really lovely instrumental stuff on there. It's just like this, like, the verse is like, got, it's like a lovely, like, sort of keyboard sort of effect when you've got, like, the crunchy industrial music as a chorus. And, I mean, in this album, Linkin Park goes to that well quite a lot, but it works. I think that's the important thing to say. I don't think they could have had their 7-album career based on this formula alone, which is why they had to expand later on. But for the time, you know, this was perfect.
I think Runaway is also one of the songs originally written by Mark Wakefield, I think. And I think you can kind of tell because it's a lot more generic. In terms of what the song's about, whereas I think songs that, you know, are kind of written by Shinoda and Bennington, they're a lot more.
I can see that. I've never thought about it that way, to be fair, until you've just said that. But yeah, now that you mention it, sort of, I assume that, and as you said earlier, I'm forgotten. The lyrically, it's a lot simpler than what you get elsewhere.
So Runaway is kind of like, feels like quite generic alongside, I think, Forgotten as well, and the other song that had Wakefield as A Place for My Head. That one is kind of, I don't want to say generic, because generic seems like the bad, but they're not. You can tell they've got a different songwriter.
Yeah, I think maybe the choruses in terms of structurally, it's a lot more simplistic and a lot more repetitive, you know, in terms of, like, the way each line of a lyric opens up. So, like, in Runaway, it's every single bit of a chorus begins with "I wanna something," and I think Place for Your Head does the same thing. It's a bit hard to, I need to look at the lyrics in front of me, because it's easy enough to say, then you've got to try and remember it off the top of your head.
Yeah, I watch how it plays.
So I want to be in another place. Hate to say we don't stand. I want to be the energy, not the enemy. Place in my head. Yeah, say so it's still a good lyric, mind you, but yeah, it just feels a lot more straightforward.
Yeah, yeah. But whereas, like, say, for example, if we head towards the front end of the album, where it is pretty much front loaded with, for lack of a better term, bangers. And it's kind of weird that you've got like the single, so you've got like Papercut, you've got One Step Closer, you've got Crawling, the singles are probably ones that attract people to an album anyway. But I think when you've got singles that are this good, it's kind of rare that you could argue that singles might be some of the best songs on the album. With Crawling, it just feels like Bennington's talking about his own history and his own experiences.
Yeah, so obviously there's a lot of songs on here about the abuse he received as a child, about depression, you know, about some of his drug and alcohol dependencies, and it's all pretty heartfelt. And I think the difference between Linkin Park and about 100 other new metal bands who never really made it is that this all comes from a genuine place, and it comes across and resonates really well.
Agreed, yeah. So,
you know, it's not just like bullshit angst, oh, I'm so miserable, that woman I was dating, what a bitch, like a lot of these other bands, you know, like your Spine Shanks and your Soils and all that lot, who never went anywhere. You know, this was quite raw, heartfelt stuff.
I think Crawling, because it's one of the few that doesn't have a lot of Shinoda lyrics in it, but it does craftily use him as backing vocals, particularly in the pre-chorus. It's got one of the best kind of core response lines with without a sense of confidence, I'm convinced it's just too much pressure to take, and it just builds up on to the build that, you know, the kind of backing bit. I think it works for the song and it works for the build up, and then it cuts in with that brilliant chorus.
And it's one of the only times of the album as well where I believe there's only two instances of chorus, because every other song virtually has like a chorus three times, whereas this just like packs a punch right away and doesn't overstay its welcome.
I think it starts with the chorus as well. I think that's what brings it in, so it kind of cuts in straight away.
The way around. I should know this. I only listened to the album again this morning, and it's not left my rotation in 18 years. I should remember this, really.
Well, no, I know what you mean. It kind of flips the thing and stuff. And
yes, yeah. You're right.
Okay. Papercut. I really like Papercut. It's a great way to open up the album.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely cracking. Obviously, I don't think it was like the lead single or anything like that, but in terms of like setting the tone for what's to come afterwards, you know, it's perfect placement. It really is.
Yeah, because you've got the kind of like the synthy open bit, and then the disc scratches come in, and then the guitar distortion comes in, and then you've got Mike Shinoda rapping in, and it's kind of like a dark song, but it's more about paranoia and self realization and stuff.
And the whole stress of like life itself, and like unsure about what's going on around your surroundings, and then so internally you're thinking, you know, that everyone could be out to get you, when it's probably, you know, not true whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. And the verse is just great. It gets in with what it's feel at night today, something in here is not right today. It's a great opening line, and leads to a really, really good bridge as well, where it's like, watches everything, and then just like, and then it just builds it right to the basically like chorus, which is a great like rough vocal performance from Bennington, and then just, but then it also has that kind of melodic pop element to it, where it's just a catchy kind of pop thing that, like, it hits you with, like, a very good memorable moment. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like the cast of this, you know, especially, you know, the lyric, you know, it's like a whirlwind inside of my head, just like sort of getting that metaphor, that image of what it feels like to be really unsure of yourself and your surroundings. Mm-hmm. You know, it is literally like, well, it's a mix of my meteorological terms, you know, it's like, you know, a tornado, like doing work to your brain, and, you know, you don't know, you know, what's, you know, going on.
Yeah, and it's like I can't stop what I'm hearing within. It's the kind of battle with your subconscious taking over. Where, like, you have moods where you're kind of trying to process stuff, and just so many voices kicking in, and your subconscious takes over, and it's just a very good way of describing it. Yeah, and it's this concept of the face inside, because I think Shinoda brings that back up again. Pretty much the second first stanza of the second verse, where he goes, I know I've got a face in me, points out all the mistakes in me, you've got a face in the inside too, your paranoia is probably worse. Oh, it's brilliant.
It is.
Yeah. But again, it, like, builds up to kind of like almost empathy as well, and kind of like a shared empathy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I think my favourite bit of the song, though, is probably like the bridge just before, like, the final chorus was, like, saying, like, the sun goes down, I feel like betray me. Just, like, again, like, really, really beautifully sung. And I think in that little bit, you get, like, a good idea of what the album's going to be, like, all the different aspects, you know. So there is going to be, you know, this rap, there is going to be this, like, screaming metal going on. But, you know, while that's going on, there's this, like, beautiful melody in there as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just brilliant. And I think the last bit to talk about on the on this bit, I think, is One Step Closer, which is the debut single. Because it's kind of hard. You can't describe. It's kind of hard to try and figure out which song might be the biggest hit for Linkin Park. Well, arguably there might be one, but I think it's like, there is a lot of songs that if you mention Linkin Park, there's always some that you mention, but One Step Closer, I think, is another one, because as a debut single, it just kicks out the door and it's brilliant. It's the first song I remember listening to him, and I'm like, and even, yeah, even, it just, yeah.
In all fairness, if Linkin Park were that single and never matched it, it still would have been a great effort for them. You know, the fact that it did come out with absolute bangers after that is credit to him, but we definitely started with the right foot forward here. And do I know another fact about this song? I hope I've got the right one, right song. Obviously, I'm going back to this interview with Radio 1 on the 15th anniversary. This wasn't in the album originally. They had the album ready, but the record label wanted a single in there, so they went ahead and wrote One Step Closer.
Okay.
Which, I get the feeling, if you read a bit between the lines, it's probably a song about the record company being twats to them.
In fact, well, if on the One Step Closer Genius page, there's a, I think the store, the little blurb on here says that, and I'll quote this, because I think if it's true, I'm assuming it might be true, it's quite an interesting story, and it probably explains a lot of the song, actually. One Step Closer was the first single release off Hybrid Theory, as well as Linkin Park's very first single overall. It has become one of Linkin Park's biggest hits, being played at almost every live show, and even being the closing song for some live shows. The chorus and first verse's lyrics were penned by former vocalist Chester Bennington's exasperation of handing lyrics to Hybrid Theory producer Don Gilmore, only for Gilmore to hand the lyrics back to him and tell him to rewrite them. And I think he went back to him saying, "I'm not rewriting them."
Yeah.
Because I think I'm pretty, but I do think apparently the this is from Nick McRae from Genius, where apparently Gilmore said all these words, they make no sense to him, and like he kept that word lyric in. So if that is true, then it does explain a lot of the songs.
Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? Because obviously I don't really, you know, I don't have any experience about what a music producer does, but as long as a lyric sort of, in terms of sentence structure, makes sense and there's no redundancies in there, sure, you let it go, don't you? Because, like, the lyric's, like, the most personal part of the song. If you're, like, a producer, you know, it's going to take a lot to say to someone, oh, yeah, these words, you know, these things that you're feeling, they're wrong, write them again. So, yeah, I can definitely understand his frustration.
Yeah, but I think frustration, I think, is kind of universal theme for the song as well. I mean, the first lyric is, I cannot take this anymore. And, yeah, and I think you can apply so many different scenarios to the song itself, and it just clicks and it works so well, and the chorus is just the chorus is beautiful. Yeah.
And at least say again, mentioning the bridge, the best bit of the entire album and arguably the signature bit of the whole of Linkin Park's career is the Shut Up When I'm Talking To You bit.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the metal influence in what ends up being a pop rock song, and again, it's probably one of the poppiest of the songs as well. But you can see why it did well. It works. It's not too metally. It's all melodic. It doesn't seem like it has anything conflicting with each other. It just works. It's just a great song.
It is, yeah, and I think this sort of song is like sort of what attracted me to this sort of metal because, you know, I'm not into the, you know, sort of metal. I've always needed a lot of melody in it, and I think like One Step Closer is one of those songs that encapsulates everything I like in music.
Yeah. In terms of liking in music, if we just jump to some of the critical reception of the album, there's a lot of praise for it. There's a lot of praise for the album itself, but there's, I've not been able to find the actual reviews, but according to the review scores in, on the Wikipedia section, I mean, there's, NME gave it 6 out of 10. Yeah. And I think Rolling Stone gave it 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah, that's about right. So I think for most of the critical ones, it was that 2, 2.5, 3 star sort of range. And I think the reason why it got sort of dismissed by critics is because, you know, bearing in mind this was released in October 2000, we're already 3 deep into Limp Bizkit's discography, Korn have already brought out 4 albums. You've got all these, also van new metal bands also coming out around this time. And Linkin Park, must be said, got quite late into the new metal game, considering by the time Meteora comes out in 2003, you know, the new metal thing is dead, virtually. So I think critics basically took one listen and decided, oh, this will never go anywhere, you know. Three stars, move along, nothing to see here, and not early anticipating how this would go on to sell a fuckload of albums.
Exactly. I think it's had about 170 weeks in the chart as of 2017. Apparently Hybrid Theory re-entered, I think it apparently re-entered the chart every time a new album came out.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
It's a bit like how in the UK, every time Foo Fighters bring out a new album, the greatest hits ends up back in like the top 10 again for a few weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it's strange how that happens, like with some bands, how newer generations of people listen to them and think, listen to the new stuff, think, oh yeah, that's great, you know, what else do they do? And then they discover things like Hybrid Theory. You know, I suspect, you know, there were still people buying Hybrid Theory, you know, because as a result of their last album, the second to last album, the third to last album, it's just, but always Hybrid Theory, they never like go back 2 minutes to Midnight or anything like that, which is a bit strange.
The performance was ridiculous. So if we look at like the charts and stuff. It got to, it was number one in New Zealand, number one in the UK, well, the rock and metal albums, number two in Austria, number two in Australia, two in Germany, Italy, got to number two in the Billboard 200 in the, the US. Got to number four.
I believe Hybrid Theory is the biggest selling album ever to not hit number one in the Billboard. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's correct. Maybe.
Okay.
If you were, yeah, if you want to correct me, at Dancing Henry on Twitter.
Well, yeah, if looking at the certification bit, over 11 million sold in the US. There's 4 million in Europe, 1.58 million in the UK, 900,000 in Germany, 500,000 in Canada, etc., etc., etc. Like, it's, I mean, in the US alone, it's like one in six people in Britain. That's like one in six people in Britain that own it in the US. That's ridiculous.
Thing is, it resonated with a lot of people, and a lot more than moody teenagers like me, you know. I think a lot of people quite older than, you know, what I was at the time, you know, bought the album as well, because I just think they had a lot more to offer than just that stereotypical angsty, moody new metal music that was elsewhere. I think they just had something about them.
Yeah.
That was really attractive to a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen Linkin Park live?
Yes, only the once. And unfortunately, it was one of my worst gigs as well. But to explain, it was during their tour for Minutes to Midnight, their third album, which is the only album of theirs I don't like. And the issue with that gig was this was the time when, you know, Minutes to Midnight, there was a lot of long, quiet songs. And for some reason, they thought it would be a good idea in their set list to get everyone all hyped up, ready to mosh about. And then they literally played four of these slow songs back to back to back, including one that goes 7 minutes. So I just got quite bored towards the end, unfortunately, yeah. So, yeah, with power hindsight, I would have probably made a better effort to have gone and seen them, especially they did Hybrid Theory and Full at Download in 2014. I don't know why I didn't go, but I wish I did. And I missed the last time they toured in the UK because of my friend's wedding. So
yeah, that was it. That was in 2017, because I know a friend of mine was actually there. I think she actually messaged me photos and the sound clips from it, and that was in the Birmingham gig, and I'm pretty sure that wasn't long before that, sadly. It's probably time to bring it up now, is Chester Bennington is no longer with us, due to committing suicide, a couple of years ago, and it's a tragic loss.
Yeah, it is. I'll just point out, by the way, that Birmingham gig was the last gig.
Was it?
Yeah, but I've just Googled it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Because it was a few weeks after that, in all fairness, when he passed away. But yeah, but I thought I heard that Birmingham show was the last one.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a sad loss for rock music in general, I think, and I think the Linkin Park fans felt it especially as well. Because I do remember when the news was starting to drop and people was a bit unsure. And I think it was Mike Shinoda who tweeted that it's true, and that kind of confirmed it. I think there was like a benefit concert. I can't remember the.
Oh, yes, it was a couple of months later, I think at the Hollywood Bowl. And so if this had the band playing, like the rest of the band, with guest vocalists coming in and doing the role of Chester for like a load of songs, obviously it's like a benefit concert. So you had the likes of a benefit concert, which took place on October 27th, which is the last time to date that Linkin Park has played as Linkin Park. But you like had Blink-182 performing there. You had Jonathan Davis of Korn. You had Ollie Sykes of Bring the Horizon. You had guys from System of Down there. Alanis Morissette, Gavin Rossdale of Bush, few members of Sum 41. And yeah, so it was a massive get together at the time. And yeah, I mean, from a personal perspective, this, I'm very rarely affected by a celebrity death, and I think I can recall three times I've been generally heartbroken, and this was one of them, because, you know, Linkin Park were a significant part of my upbringing, you know, the type of music I got into, and, you know, I heard all sorts of comments, you know, as I went into my 20s about people who haven't grown up from listening to Linkin Park, whereas I never did. You know, I still listened and bought, you know, every album that we came out with. And in all fairness, if you like, look past, you know, Hybrid Theory being this monolithic beast of an album, you know, all the albums, bar the one I just said, you know, were all fantastic. And it's a shame in some way that it's been a lot of their work's been disregarded because it wasn't Hybrid Theory. I mean, I know the last album that we did, One More Light, other albums unfairly got dismissed for being, you know, for not being Hybrid Theory, but, you know, all along, you know, the band were always experimenting and, you know, with different genres, different styles, and, you know, it was Chester's vocal work, you know, that played a huge part in that. You know, they did one album where they were quite influenced by like Public Enemy, and even though, you know, you think, you know, well, how does he fit into that? You know, he excelled at that sort of thing. And even like their last album, One More Light, which was a very poppy, a very 2017 album, you know, quite clearly influenced by like your Imagine Dragons and your Chainsmokers and all that lot. And, you know, he still performed, you know, perfectly. And it's a massive, massive shame that there won't be any more albums with him on. I mean, I don't know what the future of Linkin Park itself will be, but I think, you know, it's been, well, 2.5 years now, not really heard much about what they're going to do. And I think they know as well that they've just lost a part of a band that they'd never be able to get back. And it might not even be a good idea to continue on as Linkin Park.
I know they brought it up. I mean, they've not officially disbanded, but and I think they're kind of in limbo in that they don't want to, but they don't know how to continue the legacy of Linkin Park because of, yeah. So it's a situation I've not been, so I can't even comprehend what they've gone through or they've been through or going through. But it's a shame. Yeah,
I mean, and it makes it even harder because it's not like one of these, I don't know, 60s, 70s, 80s rock bands that, you know, the lead vocalist falls out of the restaurant, so just replaced with a life. Like, you know, at the end of the day, there was a massive tragedy, you know, a man, still a relatively young man, you know, as we said, you know, took his own life. So how do you continue from that? It's difficult.
Yeah, exactly. If people want to listen to other albums from Linkin Park, where would you suggest they start?
So, this is a bit of an interesting take, because normally the obvious answer is Meteora, which has got, you know, Numb on it, as we mentioned earlier on. It's got Faint on it, which is one of their, well, I agree, the biggest track post Hybrid Theory on it. But I think people say that because it's basically more of the same with Hybrid Theory. It's still a good album, you know, and there's still some cracking tracks on it. But I'd actually go with Living Things from 2012. Yeah, I'm not sure if you ever listened to that one.
I got to Meteora and kind of faded away and not really listened to anything else since then. I think because I think I had friends who talked about Minutes to Midnight and then I kind of not listened and kind of just not gave him much attention since.
No. I mean, Minutes to Midnight, I mean, I've sort of got on with it a bit more in recent times, but I still don't think it's a good album by any stretch of imagination, unfortunately. I think it was the combination of having Rick Rubin there doing nothing and them being given bad advice on, they wanted to make an album like Arcade Fire, but I think we were told, oh yeah, all you need to do is shake some keys about near the microphone and that should do it. And it's really not, you know, there was more to it than that. And I think it was just a dud in that regard. But 2012's a Living Things, you know, for one thing, it's got my, probably second favourite Linkin Park track on it, Roads Untravelled. A fantastic song, which I do recommend checking out. Unfortunately, it was sullied by being in a Need for Speed film, but, you know, it is what it is. You get the title, you get Roads in the title, you're going to, you know, get that risk. But there's all sorts of great tracks on there, like Burn It Down, Castle Glass, Lost in the Echo. It's like Hybrid Theory, and that the song's a bit more straightforward than some of the more experimental albums that we did. But I think, just think they're nailing perfectly, and I do recommend for anyone, like I said, well, like you, who disregarded Linkin Park after Meteor, I definitely would check that out.
Okay. I probably need to, actually, so I need to just figure out what I missed. And as we lead up to the end of another edition of Pick a Disc, it leads me to ask the most important question, which is which song are you going to pick for the playlist?
Okay, now if you've noticed, dear listeners, so far we've not mentioned a particular track.
I think I must have worked it out.
Yeah, they're quite a famous track. I think this was their biggest track overall in terms of chart positions and everything like that.
Yeah, I think A Place for My Head is pretty much a good choice.
Yeah, it's got to be In the End. I just can't look past it whatsoever. It was, for me, the song that got me into them. It's just one of those songs that just, like, really, you know, hits the spot. You know, it's quite an emotional song. Again, I think it's another song about how the record company are assholes. You know, I was reading about the lyrics this morning and I just thought, oh, hang on a minute. I think this was another one of the tracks that either wasn't fully formed or wasn't yet on Hybrid Theory until they were asked to write another couple of tracks. But it's, yeah, just everything about the song's magnificent. And again, it just highlights everything that was so good about Linkin Park.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember listening to the album, and I think I had the album before this was a single.
Yeah.
And I can remember listening to this song and really liking the song and, like, being really, and, like, kind of happy that there was a single and a video that came out for it. And I think the video actually won Best Rock Video, I think, in one year.
Now, I haven't watched the video in years, and I suspect now it looks terrible. But going by memory alone, I think it's my favourite music video ever. And this is coming from, like, someone thinking about, like, 13-year-old watching it and having their mind blown. I think if you look at it now, it's probably a bit hammy and such, because I think it starts raining at the most emotional point and every other trick in the book.
It's just exquisite. There's that piano at the start. It just builds up beautifully. You can kind of hear the rain and hear the rain and just, like, the emotion in it. And I think, as I said at the start, there are songs which work well as covers. Now, this is arguably as well, it's probably one of the most streamlined genre songs, actually. It's not one that kind of mixes a load of genres. It's more or less a straight rock song with, like, a rap verse in it.
It is.
Yeah, which is kind of weird considering that we spent, like, about an hour talking about how they're kind of masters of merging them. But there are so many covers of the song which work really well. It works really well as, like, an acoustic guitar song. I think, to the fact as well, I'm pretty sure it was a cover of this song that the BBC played when England got knocked out of the 2018 World Cup.
Did they? I think you're right, you know.
Was it now 2016 World Cup, sorry?
No, it was 2018 World Cup.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah. Oh god, it might have been. I have to look that one back up now.
I remember just watching it, and as like they had like this like sepia pictures of the game that just finished about half an hour, 45 minutes beforehand, and then it was just kind of like the guitar part of a kind of like a Spanish flamenco guitar cover of In the End, where these like male and female vocalists just started singing over it. It was actually really, really good actually, but it's just kind of weird how like an American kind of new metal song it was used to kind of soothe the agony of a nation after a footballing defeat. But again,
wow, it would have worked. Yeah, you know? But again, it's one of those songs.
Yeah, and it's just a master of just how good that song is. And I say I've got no say in what goes and what doesn't go on the playlist, but you've got no complaint from me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so In the End is the latest edition of the playlist. And with that, we've come to the end of your second go at Pick a Disc.
When's my third go? Can I come back now?
you might have to give me a bit of a pre-warning. So I'm come back with another Limp Bizkit album just to rub it in.
Yeah. To be fair, I'm just trying to think if I go in order of albums that, you know, that meant a lot to me. I don't know. I think you're on to Muse next, so watch out.
Oh, okay.
but that's for another time.
Yeah, that's for another time. So if people want to find you and your podcasting efforts, where can they find you?
It's probably easiest to follow me on Twitter at kidswol, that's SWOL. And that, I got all the information there on like whatever blog I'm writing at the time and all that lot. But I also have two podcasts. Awesome. We made this network. I've got the now surprisingly long running for me, Cinematry. So if you go to cinematry.com or at Cinematry on all the social media, you'll be able to find us there. And that's a horror podcast reviewing sequels, prequels, remakes, reboots, squeakquels maybe. And then I've also got a Disney podcast for some reason. Tim talked me into that one, called Without a Mouse. And you can find us at PodWAM. That's PodWAM on Twitter, where you can find all the information and the films we're reviewing. Such films as including Million Dollar Duck and a film called Gus about a mule that can kick American footballs very well.
I do wholeheartedly recommend listening to it because it is quite funny. It is quite funny. And I think the more people that listen to it, the more that they can justify putting themselves through the psychological horror of going through some really awful films.
And it has been psychologically very horrible.
Yeah. But, do listen to it. Do catch up, because at some point in the next month or so, a very familiar voice that you might be familiar with might show up on there. So they've got them dragging me onto it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but, you know, if it's before then it New will Year's
be.
Day.
Yeah. It's next week, it'll be out.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Bloody hell. So you're on the New Year's Day edition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but we won't reveal the film until a lot sooner before the podcast, so stay tuned.
Yeah, see what hell they put me through. So, yeah.
Sorry.
And with that, Chris, thank you ever so much for allowing me the opportunity to revisit a great, great album.
Oh. Well, thank you for having me on the podcast again.
Yeah, and it was much better than your last attempt.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Not bottom of power this time, then.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Brilliant.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc, and I've been your host, Matthew Laver. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This Podcast Network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/PickADisc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.